Okay, we're all set. Great. Good afternoon, good evening, everyone. My name is David Ainsworth. I'm the head of the Communications Unit at the Secretariat of the Convention on Biological Diversity. It's my pleasure to invite you to this press briefing taking place here in Montreal, Canada, in the offices of the Secretariat. Je m'appelle David Ainsworth, je suis chargé de communication du Secrétariat de la Convention sur la diversité biologique. C'est vraiment un plaisir de vous accueillir pour cette point de presse ici à Montréal. In today's conference, the subject is going to be looking at on the road to COP16. And in that regard, we are delighted to have with us the principal actors who took us from COP15 to COP16 in this event. We have with us the Minister of Environment, the Honorable Stephen Guilbeault, who's the Minister of Environment and Climate Change Canada, with us seated in the middle. We also have with us the Honorable Susana Mohammed, the Minister of Environment and Sustainable Development of Colombia, who is the incoming president for the COP16 meeting planned this fall in Cali, Colombia. And we have Astrid Schomacher with us, the Executive Secretary of the Convention on Biological Diversity. And sitting right beside me here is David Cooper, who is the Deputy Executive Secretary of the Convention on Biological Diversity. And the four of these people will be taking questions from you in today's meeting. J'aimerais annoncer les participants au panel où nous avons le honorable Stephen Guilbeault, ministre de l'Environnement et Changement Climatique du Canada. Nous avons le ministre de l'Environnement et Développement Durable du Colombie, l'honorable Susana Mohammed. Nous avons le secrétaire exécutif de la Convention sur la diversité biologique, Astrid Schomacher, et le député secrétaire exécutif de la Convention, David Cooper, juste à côté de moi. For this conference, we will have a period of about 30 minutes involving a few statements from some of the participants and answering questions. And then the ministers will have to leave, and then we'll have almost an annex to this conference where the executive secretary and the deputy will be there to take more technical questions on the formal political agenda, formal negotiating agenda taking place at COP16. But let me get started right now with the statements, and when I follow it, I'll talk about how we'll manage the questions. So for that, I'd like to begin with the Executive Secretary, Astrid Schomacher, who will set the scene for us. Astrid, the floor is yours.
Thank you, David, and good afternoon, everybody. Minister Mohammed, Minister Guilbeault, it's really a pleasure to welcome you here in the Secretariat. In a way, your presence symbolizes the continuity on the way to COP16 from COP15, and of course, that is a very, very important journey where we've started with unprecedented commitments and an unprecedented new understanding of the importance of biodiversity. And now, under your leadership, Minister Mohammed, the COP16 parties will have to demonstrate that they actually walk the talk. So they haven't just promised, but they put their promises into action. And in order to support this sort of movement for more biodiversity, the Colombian presidency has given us an excellent motto for the conference: peace with nature. It's going to be the theme of COP16. And we see that really as a powerful call to action. And of course, it also chimes in very nicely with the UN Secretary General's call to make peace with nature, which he described in a landmark address in December 2022, saying that making peace with nature is the defining task of the 21st century. And the way we see it, the Kunming-Montreal Global Biodiversity Framework, the KMGBF, is actually the blueprint for making peace with nature. It has four goals, and these are about protecting and restoring nature, prospering with nature, sharing the benefits that nature brings to us fairly, and then investing and collaborating with nature. And all of these issues are on the agenda of COP16. Now, most importantly, and I already said it, is to demonstrate that COP15 has brought forward unprecedented action, just as COP15 itself was an unprecedented agreement. So we will be looking at COP15 and how countries have started their journey of implementation to 2030. This is done either via national biodiversity strategy and action plans, and then also targets that countries have to put forward. And the deadline for that is COP16, but we are pleased, for example, to say that already 61 parties have come forward with more than 1,500 targets, which we're now analyzing and can report on at COP16. Also very, very important will be that COP16 finishes the unfinished business from COP15, and there in particular, this is about access and benefit sharing on digital sequence information from genetic resources. Now, that's a very technical subject, but a very, very important one, also in terms of the mobilization of resources, but also in terms of the understanding of how we interact with nature, that when we take from nature, when we benefit from nature, we give back to nature. And it's about operationalizing the mechanism that was already agreed at COP15. And in addition to that, COP15 also made very, very ambitious promises on biodiversity finance. Now, the Global Environment Facility acted quickly. They set up the GBFF, the Global Biodiversity Framework Fund, and Canada has been leading the way with capitalizing the fund with $200 million. Some other countries have followed suit. We are hoping to see more action in that space in the run-up to COP16 and at COP16. And then COP16, and I come slowly to a close, also includes initiatives that will bring the indigenous peoples and local communities to the table and elevate their voices and all the traditional knowledge they can bring to the debate. And I'm sure Minister Mohammed will speak of that. But they are also then part of the largest green zone that we have ever seen, where all actors of civil society can bring together their energy and their ideas of how we can move forward in the implementation of our framework. So Colombia's admirable efforts in ensuring this widest possible participation are really consistent with one of the main credos, I would say, of the framework, and that is that we can only achieve the framework if all parts of government work together, but also if all parts of society come together, and we will have ample opportunity at COP16 to demonstrate how that can work. And I think I'll leave it at that and hand back over to David.
Great. Thank you very much, Executive Secretary. Our Executive Secretary has set the scene. And so now, as we are in Montreal, it's entirely fitting that we hear from Minister Guilbeault, who was representing Canada, hosting that great meeting where the Kunming Montreal Global Biodiversity Framework came into being. So, Minister, I invite you to take the floor.
Merci, David. Bonjour à toutes et à tous. Welcome to all. First, I would like to say that we are on the unceded traditional territory of the Ganyahaga Nation, part of the Haudenosaunee Confederation. They are the traditional custodian and guardians of the lands and waters on which we gather today. C'est avec beaucoup de plaisir que j'aimerais vous présenter Madame Susana Mohamed, qui est la ministre colombienne de l'Environnement et du Développement durable. J'ai eu le plaisir de travailler avec elle déjà depuis plusieurs années, et vous allez voir, pour ceux qui ne le savent pas encore, c'est une alliée, c'est une championne de la défense de l'environnement, de la protection de la nature, la lutte au changement climatique et aussi des voix autochtones. Je pense qu'elle va nous en dire plus sur la vision, sa vision et celle de son gouvernement pour la COP16. So today we're passing the torch on the world's biggest nature protection conference. Minister Mohamed, presiding over COP16, will be presiding over COP16 starting on October 21st in Cali, Colombia. And in the last 2 years, we've done a lot of work. There is a lot of work that needs to be done. Some of you will recall that in 2022, we didn't even know that we were going to be able to host COP16, let alone be able to come to the conclusion that many have called the Paris moment for nature. And we did that by working together in challenging times. And you know, it is as challenging now as it was then. But the only way we can get there is by working together. And the issues couldn't be as urgent as they were then. Species are still going extinct. We're still unsustainably using natural resources. We're not protecting critical habitats. And we've still not collectively realized that in the fight against climate change, our biggest ally is nature. But we did what very few thought was possible in 2002. We got 196 countries to agree to the Kunming-Montreal Biodiversity Framework. And I think at the time, all countries said loud and clear, there's a better way to work with nature and to care for nature. Une nouvelle voie, nous pouvons collectivement répondre à la crise de la biodiversité et celle de la pollution, tout en soutenant des communautés fortes et durables partout à l'échelle de la planète. C'est certain qu'il est facile d'utiliser la peur pour bloquer des solutions. Et on voit des politiciens faire ça, des politiciennes faire ça partout sur la planète. Ces gens-là n'ont hélas aucune solution à offrir, que ce soit sur la protection de la nature, la lutte au changement climatique ou encore la lutte à la pollution plastique. Mais la COP15 nous a appris l'importance de travailler ensemble pour arriver à des résultats ambitieux. Comme on dit si bien en québécois, il faut que les bottines suivent les barrières. Alors, depuis 2015, le Canada s'est engagé dans la plus grande campagne de protection de la biodiversité de l'histoire du pays. Je vous donne quelques chiffres, je ne vais pas vous inonder de ça, mais en 2015, lorsque notre gouvernement arrive au pouvoir, le Canada protège à peine 1% de nos océans, de nos espaces côtiers. Nous sommes à plus de presque 15% aujourd'hui. Nous protégeons 10% de nos territoires, Nous sommes à peu près à 14 % aujourd'hui. J'ai bon espoir que d'ici la fin de l'année, au Canada, nous serons presque à 20 % dans les deux cas, à la fois pour la protection terrestre et la protection maritime. Et on voit les impacts combinés des changements climatiques et de la surutilisation de nos ressources naturelles, que ce soit les feux de forêt, que ce soit les inondations. La science nous demande d'agir. Nous avons l'opportunité de bâtir une société et une économie qui soit plus durable pour que les générations futures puissent en bénéficier. Nous avons présentement un plan au Canada de 12 milliards de dollars investis en matière de protection de la biodiversité. Et ce qui est vrai au niveau international l'est tout aussi au niveau canadien. C'est ensemble qu'on va réussir. L'ensemble des gouvernements, les provinces, les municipalités, les peuples autochtones, bien sûr le secteur privé et les ONG et bien d'autres. So in October, the world will look to Cali so that we can continue the work we started in Montreal. Countries, provinces, indigenous nations, cities, private sector, all partners must again come together to make progress on protecting the planet before it is too late. Together, we can find ways to mobilize, innovate, and respond to the biodiversity crisis. I'm happy now to pass it on to Minister Mohamed. Bienvenida, Ministra Mohamed.
Muchas gracias, ministro. Un saludo a la secretaria, al deputy secretary. Gracias por nuestro recibimiento acá. Thank you for receiving us here in Montreal. And we have been expending three long days of actually going through all the negotiation processes and understanding.
Another long day today.
Yes. Understanding in depth what the negotiation will be about. But especially also working together with the Secretariat so we can fulfill a role as a host country and be able to welcome the world to move forward one step further regarding the global biodiversity framework. In this 21st century, and that's the main motivation why Colombia decided to host this conference, we see there is a double movement that humanity has to make. The first one is decarbonize and have that just energy transition. We have to be just, I emphasize. But on the other side of the coin is to restore nature and to allow nature to take again its power over planet Earth so that we can really, at the end, stabilize the climate. Otherwise, it will be something as if one purpose is eating the other, meaning that if we are invest a lot in this process of nature recovery, but at the same time we are not decarbonizing, the climate will continue changing and nature will not have the time also to adapt. And if nature collapses, communities and people will also collapse. Society will collapse. And this is exactly the double movement that I think the world is not still conscious of. Still, climate has much more political awareness, economic investment, but we are not seeing the other side of the coin, and it's dangerous. That is dangerous for humanity. So one of our main purposes at COP16 in Cali is to make biodiversity and the global Kunming-Montreal framework as relevant politically, the same as currently the climate agenda is. And to bring awareness of the need that we all have, as the framework says, as a whole government and whole of society, to be able to mobilize the necessary action and implementation for these two movements to happen in order to be able to have humanity in safe limits during the 21st century. But we are also calling for peace with nature. And by that, Colombia means to have an in-depth reflection of how that transition is going to happen. We are calling for putting human rights at the center of this process of transition, because actually this change can be inclusive and it can bring economic and social benefits for millions of people around the world. And we are actually positioned to do that because we have now a global mandate that was agreed here in Montreal. But it means also that all of society can mobilize. It means that we need to rethink the way we live, and making peace with nature will be a central question of how we redefine business, how we redefine the economy, how we redefine the way we build cities, how we redefine the way we live. And if we incorporate, as Minister Guibault said, nature as our main ally, as actually a force for life and change that relationship, that mental relationship of nature as a resource, but rather we come back to this ecosystem cycles, for sure we're going to be able to build some new perspectives on society. So how we're going to do this is by creating a participatory action zone, we call it the Green Zone, where we have openly invited stakeholders to put their perspectives. We have divided that zone during the 12 days with 12 themes, and we have organized the proposal from stakeholders. We received in 1 month of opening 1,500 events that were proposed by 30 countries, and we will have indigenous people, women, youth, business people, and whole of society mobilizing to that action and participation zone. But we will connect that energy also to the blue zone, where the negotiation will be happening and where we have four main outcomes that we want to see, and that also Secretary Astrid already mentioned, the digital sequencing of information fund and framework, the Indigenous Peoples Work Program, the framework for implementation, how are we implemented, the reflection on implementation and the targets towards 2030, and all, of course, the financial arrangements and mechanisms that would allow for that. The idea is actually that in the Blue Zone, we will also have forums from stakeholders, but also we will bring that those voices from the Green Zone so that we can fulfill one of our commitments as Colombian governments, that this will be People's Cop. And by that, we mean that we want to materialize that principle of the Kunming-Montreal framework, which is whole of society, whole of government mobilized. Hopefully, at the end of COP16, beyond the very successful negotiation processes and agreements by governments, the participation of many stakeholders, we can gather a new vision, a new energy that allows for a coalition, the Peace for Nature coalition, to start mobilizing around the world the energy required for this change to happen. So we are very excited for lots of work happening at the moment, but very much looking forward to welcoming you all in Cali, Colombia.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Minister. Thank you, Ministers, and thank you, Executive Secretary, for your comments. So let's turn to questions right now. So because we've got a number of people online in limited time, I'm going to ask that you just really take one question each. I'll open up the floor. See people have raised their hands. I'll introduce you, indicate who you want to ask that question to. I'm afraid we won't have time for follow-ups if we want to be fair and share this around to everyone. The first person who raised his hand is Patrick, and I presume that's Patrick Greenfield of The Guardian. So can we open up the mic and camera for Patrick right now, please? Great. Patrick, the floor is yours. Go ahead.
Hi, everyone. Good to see you all. I have a question for Minister Mohammad. My question is, at COP16, we will have no idea if countries from the global north are keeping their promises on finance due to delays in OECD monitoring. Nobody seems to be keeping score of whether countries are actually delivering on their promises on money, and that will be a huge issue for the global south. Do you recognise this as a problem? And if so, what is being done about it? Thank you.
Will I answer immediately?
Yes, please. Yes.
Thank you for the question. I think, of course, you have touched one of the most sensitive issues. There is two realities. First one, we will use this press conference to call for countries to make a gesture to be able to increase the trust of the conference, and is to actually put their money in the Global Biodiversity Fund that we approve at Kunming-Montreal. It will be a sign that we are committed, that we can move forward, and it will also create a different climate and environment towards this negotiation and the talk about resources. Although we also have to be fair that they are not accountable to fulfill the promise until 2025. That was also agreed on the framework, but it would be a good sign that we are on track. So I am making this public call for these donors to step forward. The second thing is that we are creating in the Finance Day a framework for discussion that allows, at the same time that developed countries need to fulfill the promise, because that's written and it's an agreement of the parties in last COP15, and we hope to take that into consideration in the discussions. We also want to open broader the discussion, and I'm talking about the political discussion, about what would be the future mechanisms and the future sources of finance for this work. It is clear that this will not be solved only with development assistance money, although the commitments have to be fulfilled because they were written and there were a consensus of the parties at COP15. But it is essential that we start looking as governments and a multilateral system, what will be sustained and secure resources for the future. And of course, that needs a public discussion and a public decision that could be built for the future of the Paris. On the finance day, we have invited finance ministers to be able to talk also to environment ministers. We are working to have a presence in the autumn assemblies of the multilateral banks in Washington, which will be happening in parallel with COP16, and we also are inviting a subset of finance ministers to come, and the International Monetary Fund, as well as the multilateral banks, to be in Cali for this finance day, where we want to give prominence of what are the alternatives. We hope that this is also a contribution that will help to start opening, and I have trust that the Biodiversity Convention can be a pioneer with respect to the Climate Convention, to open new doors of possibilities for funding mechanisms that are more sustainable and that are at the scale of the challenge that we are facing. And hopefully that is a good input also for the Baku meeting in December, where we will be opening new possibilities and opportunities. So let's see how all this works, but I think it's an essential question at the center of the table, and we have to confront it at the scale of the requirement.
Great. Thank you.
If I may add.
Yeah, please go ahead, Nestor.
Yes. Good to see you, Patrick. I would just add a few things to what Susanna said. I mean, my understanding is that there are chances that the OECD report, and I understand that not everybody agrees with the OECD methodologies, just the same, as not everyone agrees on the climate side of things, but they have been providing, I think, important input into that discussion. And my understanding is that we might have it in time for COP16. As Susanna rightly pointed out, the commitment is for 2025, but it would be good to have as much information as possible before COP16. As previous host country, I'm committing to Susanna and to the Secretary to help talk to some of my peers in terms of resource mobilization. I think we've seen countries step up for the JEF fund, perhaps not as much as many of us would have wanted. $500 million is not nothing, but we need more. And Canada will be happy to help work with partners on that in the lead up and following COP16.
Great. Thank you very, very much. So the next question, I see it's from Stella Paul in the chat, but it follows a little bit on what Patrick's done. Stella's asking, Stella, do you want to open your mic and ask it? It does seem about finishing the unfinished business on resource mobilization from the private sector. Stella, is there something you would like to ask that would supplement the answers we've already received on finance and mobilization?
Thank you, David. If you can hear me.
We can hear you. Go right ahead.
Yeah, that's precisely the question. You know, Astrid just mentioned, you know, the one of the goals would be to finish the unfinished business. So in that regard, my question to Ms. Mahmoud would be, you know, what's your plan? You know, how do you actually plan to do that? And also engaging in, especially in terms of engaging the private sector, which we haven't really seen happening a lot until now. Thank you.
Mr. Mohammed, to you.
Yes, that's also a very good question, because I think this principle of the framework of mobilizing whole of government and whole of society is absolutely critical. The private sector would be involved in two ways. First, we're having a mobilization in the green zone and then the blue zone. And that mobilization is actually to talk about Target 15, but also to bring the private sector into the context of the challenge that we have. Usually, or sometimes, the relationship has been, how do we make the the business sector understand how to incorporate biodiversity. But we want to reverse that question, because actually what the framework is asking is for a proactive role of business, which means is what are the responsibilities towards keeping a safe environment, and what is its contribution that it can do. And in that perspective, I think there are two issues that the framework brings directly to the business sector. First, it mandates governments to take away in time the subsidies that subsidize entire sectors of the economy that may affect biodiversity. So what are the transitions we need to organize and plan with those sectors that today are receiving those subsidies and that will need to shift their practices so that they basically can make the transition? And how do we do it? That's why human rights is so important. In a fair way, so that this is not an environmental backlash by people, but actually it's an opportunity for people and businesses. So we hope at COP16 to bring a lot of inspiration from those business models that are already incorporated and taking nature as a design into consideration, and that are being the vanguard of that new prospect, and also discuss with the business sector, of course, what the framework means for them and how can we make this partnership between government and business to move forward together in these transitions. It cannot become an opposition between the economy and government policies. It has to become a partnership, and that partnership needs to have a common purpose, that we need to have all the activities that humanity makes into safe environment, into safe limits. Otherwise, everybody will lose. It's not about, and it's going to be actually more detrimental to the economic process. That affects societies, affects governments, everybody. So that's the framework of the discussion. We're going to have the Green Zone Business Forum. We're going to have actually examples of green businesses. And we're also going to have the Business Forum at the Blue Zone. And we want to capture that dialogue to be able to give back to countries and governments how to work with the business sector for the implementation of the framework.
Great, thank you very much. Going to move on quickly now to Pierre Champagne. Eric, I believe you're with La Presse. Go ahead, Eric. Eric, la parole est à vous. Eric? Okay, we'll come back to Eric in a minute then. So, Ehsan Masoud. Ehsan, please, the floor is yours, Ehsan.
Hi, can you hear?
Ehsan?
Can you hear?
We can hear you, Ehsan. Please go ahead.
You can, great.
Yeah, we can hear you. Go ahead, please.
Thank you. Thanks, David. About 3 years ago, the government of China pledged $235 million to the Kunming Biodiversity Fund. And I wondered if either of the ministers could help us with what's happened with that? Has the money been disbursed? It's been quite difficult to find out. Not that we haven't tried very hard, to be honest, but I thought this would be a good opportunity to find out where we are with that particular fund. Thank you.
Ehsan, that's a question. Maybe I'll come back later. We'll have the executive secretary and the deputy executive secretary, because you know that is the COP15 presidency fund. So neither Minister Guilbeault nor Minister Mohammed are in a position to answer that. So Ehsan, we'll come back to you if you can hang on when we do the annex questions on that one. So apologies, but you hold on to that one for a minute. We'll get that on the go. Let's see here. We have Natasha. Natasha, the floor is yours, please. Natasha. You have to respond quickly, everyone, otherwise I'm going to move on. Okay, sorry, Natasha, we'll come back to you. Jake Spring of Reuters. Jake Spring, go ahead, please. Goodness, is everyone sleeping at the switch today? Jake Spring.
Hi there. Sorry, there's a bit of a
Jake
lag.
Jake says he can't open his mic.
Hi, there's a bit of a lag.
Okay, good. Thanks. Thanks, Jake.
Sorry about that.
Good.
I'm
go ahead.
Jake with
You're on.
Reuters. Thanks. I'm Jake with Reuters. Minister Mohammed had said she wants to put biodiversity on the same footing as climate, but I can't help but note how stark the contrast is with climate COPs. At climate COPs, dozens of heads of state and governments attend, and that really signals how important politically climate is viewed. And that element, heads of states and governments, seems to be completely missing from the biodiversity COP. Do you expect any heads of state or government to attend to signal the political importance? And have people like Lula, Macron, Keir Starmer or any other heads of government been invited to COP16? Thank you.
Yes, President Petro has invited all heads of state, and we are following up with some of them. We would like to have a subset of heads of state. We don't expect, of course, to be as big as climate, which has become a very political and relevant conference for heads of state, especially I think because, of course, the fossil fuel issue is at the center of it. It conveys a lot of economic interest. It's a very well political issue that is being positioned. But I think slowly but surely, biodiversity is getting its momentum as well. And we hope that we can have at COP some heads of state. Of course, at the relevant time, we will confirm. And let's see, it's also a very busy schedule, international schedule at the end, beginning of November. So we are doing our best as Colombian government. But I will highlight a lot is the very high enthusiasm for the participation of many sectors of society and the political mobilization that is happening towards COP16. Hopefully, even if heads of state do not show up in Cali, that mobilization will be the seeds for they starting to call the importance of this issue and increasing the political relevancy. We really believe of the constituencies, we really believe at the basis of society, if the issue is ingrained, then they will put politics to move forward with it. And hopefully we can create a good positive circle in that perspective and increase the profile of the situation of biodiversity. I think it started to become an issue for finance ministers because their environment ministers are coming to the finance minister saying, okay, we have to start accommodating the global biodiversity frameworks. It starts to become a whole government issue, and that will increase the profile and hopefully the presence of heads of state will give more relevance, but we plan good seeds for the future as well.
Good. If I may add, David, thank you for the question, Jake. I think it's fair to say that the CBD COP is still catching up in terms of the level of importance that is given to it to the climate COP. But I think it is equally fair to say that it is catching up, that the COP15 was the largest CBD COP ever in terms of participation. And we had months to organize it, not a year, let alone 2 years, but many COPs will, many host countries will have to organize it. The level of the level of attention paid to the issue, whether it's COP at a COP or outside of COPs, to nature is increasing. We're seeing more and more actors come to the table saying, hey, we want to be part of the solution. We want to work with governments, whether it's businesses, whether it's local governments, municipalities, obviously indigenous peoples, trade unions. So I think that we are seeing it, but there's still some work to be done. We actually considered for COP15 heads of state segment. We just had, and we heard from certain countries that their leaders were ready to come. We just had so little time to organize it that it wasn't really possible. But I think we're getting there.
Great. Okay. Thank you very much. So there is a problem with the microphones. I apologize to people online. So Eric Champagne of La Presse, his question is in the chat, and it goes both to both of you ministers. His question is to say, so after COP15 in Montreal, what could be the best conclusion of COP16 in your wildest dreams? Okay, to both of you. So,
okay, well, there's no wild dreams in the multilateral system because the agendas are set 2 years before. So the agenda has been negotiated for 2 years. And as you know, we got this intention to do COP because of Turkey's resignation. So we only had the news that we were going to be the COP host this January. So as well as Montreal, it has been a very fast moving process. But I say that if we have a very strong engagement from all sectors of society that get very inspired of this new vision of how making peace with nature is at the core of what we need to do at the 21st century, I would say that's a first political success. Secondly, if we are able to position within governments and within a whole of society as well, that the parallel movement to decarbonization is implementing the global biodiversity, meaning taking care of nature, I think it will be a success. And in terms of negotiation, if we are able to approve the Digital Sequencing of Information Fund and the mechanism for implementation. If we are able to approve with broad participation of indigenous people, local communities, Afro-descendants, campesinos, the work program, and they are ready for action because they are the people at the site, at the territories, in the biodiversity spots, and they are ready for action, we're going to have a huge movement. And also, if we get a positive of environment for the guarantees for implementation, that we are going to achieve these goals, that governments are going to do their best, and the finance agreement moves forward. If we are able to put these four things that are on the negotiation, and these other two objectives that are more political objectives, I think we will have a very successful COP that is contributing in the global community to a global multilateral purpose.
I agree with everything Susanna has said. I think COP15, and Astrid talked about that earlier in her intervention, was about coming together to agree on what needed to be done. And COP16 is about how do we implement this? And Susanna has spoken about this new vision. Let me give you an example. I'd say almost 100% of new conservation projects we're doing in Canada, we do in partnership with Indigenous nations. In fact, we're finalizing what, to our knowledge, is the world's largest Indigenous-led conservation project in the Northwest Territories of Canada. It when finalized, and I'm confident we'll get there before COP16, it will be roughly 1 million square kilometer, four times the size of the United Kingdom. That's, I would argue, this is a new vision, a new way of doing things. Like that's not how we used to do things in Canada in terms of conservation. We need to change that. I think we need to show that we collectively that we are making progress, whether it's on conservation, restoration, resource mobilization. This is, and if we can collectively show that we are making progress on all of these elements and the various targets of the Kunming-Montreal Global Biodiversity Framework, then people will be able to say this is a success.
Perfect. Okay, so my apologies, everyone. The ministers have got a very busy schedule, so we will need to bid farewell to both Minister Guilbeault and Minister Mohammed. However, those of you online, do not leave, because we're going to have Astrid Schumacher and David Cooper, who are going to be able to take some of these other questions, such as the question we had about the Kunming Biodiversity Fund from Issa Massoud. So please stay in line and we'll continue the questions, and having David and Astrid here will allow you to get those areas. So I bid farewell to our guests, the ministers. We will see more of them in the months to come and other press availabilities and briefings. Thank you very much. So online, just hold for me in a few minutes. And then we'll have Astrid and David if we set up the table. And also the teams from Canada will head out. So we'll launch some next week. We okay? So let me ask it again. Juliana, sorry that we were muted here in the room. Complicated technical things here. Juliana from Carbon Brief, the floor is yours if you'd like your question. And you've got the experts here who know everything in and out about the CBD and the COP process. Go ahead.
Yes, thank you. Dr. Schumacher, you said that I believe 61 parties have submitted targets. But as of this week, only 14 parties and BSAPs have been posted online. So I was wondering if 61 was referring to formal NBSAPs or some other mechanism, and how many parties you expect will submit their NBSAPs by the time of COP16, given that they are all supposed to have done so this month.
Well, thank you so much for the question. So the 61 parties that I referred to was the parties that have submitted targets to the CBD Secretariat. So as you know, there was an obligation, a commitment to submit NBSAPs, and then where that's not possible, at least to submit targets that are aligned with the framework. And to that second call, 61 countries have so far responded, and I think we're above 1,550 targets, which we're now analyzing. Now, in terms of the NBSAPs themselves, I think it's, first of all, it's fair to say that an NBSAP, and Mr. Mohammed has stressed that several times, is an all of government endeavor. So it's not something that, you know, we can just scribble down and be very fast. On the other hand, it's also clear we don't have much time between now and 2030. So it's a process that needs acceleration, and it is accelerating. So until today, we have actually 16 parties that have now submitted the NDSUBs. And we have done regional workshops around the world where we have sort of worked together with parties and then with implementing supporters like UNEP and UNDP to see what the process is and to build capacity for these concepts. And from all these regional conversations that have taken place, we are actually confident that many more NDSUBs will be submitted between now and COP16. And the actual deadline for submission was COP16 itself. We've heard many parties tell us that they are in the last, sort of on the cusp of submitting. So we're positive that we will have many more by the time COP starts.
Excellent. Okay, thank you very much. I'm going to now turn the question to Christelle Hibert. She wrote the question in the chat, so I'll just read this out, Christelle. So her question, she says, so there's a new parliament in the European Union. And she indicates this may be less friendly with nature. Do you have any confidence in the EU position? Thanks very much.
Yeah, thank you very much for the question. Indeed, the new parliament has constituted itself, and the new commission is now being put together and will come into office during COP. So Europe has been in many ways been a leader in global biodiversity, and one example for that is, of course, that just yesterday, I believe, the groundbreaking nature restoration law entered into force. And what's important when we see the efforts of the European Union is that it is 27 countries that operates very much in terms of putting a legal framework together. And the main parts of this legal framework are now in place, both on the climate side and on the biodiversity protection side. And we're now moving to implementation. And what we think the European Parliament and also the new Commission will focus on is to say, now we've got everything in place. We've got the political commitments. We've got the nature restoration law. We have various other bits and pieces. We have our biodiversity strategy. All of that is ready in Europe. And now it's about implementation and making implementation done in such a way that it is not overly burdensome for companies and that also all of society can participate. So we're confident that Europe will stay a biodiversity leader together with many other countries that are very ambitious in their approach to the global framework.
Great. Okay. Thank you very much, Astrid. So I see we've got a question from Natasha. Natasha, I guess you work for Nature. But then there's also the follow-up question for Ehsan Masood. They're about the same here. So Natasha's question in the chat, if I may, just got a couple of mics. So Natasha points out that Minister Mohammed talked about the possibility of new mechanisms and opportunities for funding. Does that include the option for an independent fund for biodiversity that would be separate from the biodiversity fund in the Global Environment Facility? And then also we can come back to Ehsan Masood's question, which was about this Kunming Biodiversity Fund announced at the beginning of COP15 by the COP15 presidency. And so I'm going to maybe have the two of you answer them. So let's start with Natasha's question about the option for an independent fund, and then coming back to Ehsan Masood talking a bit about the Kunming Biodiversity Fund. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks, David. Yeah, Natasha. So at COP15, we have already decided that there will be a new global mechanism for sharing the benefits on digital sequencing information on genetic resources. And that global mechanism includes a fund. And the discussion that is now taking place is that fund that is already agreed in principle, how will it operate? Will it be a new fund, a completely new fund? And that is one of the options on the table. Or will it be one of the existing funds that we have? And the GEF, of course, the GEF Global Biodiversity Fund is one of those existing funds that some parties think could carry out the function of being the fund of the mechanism. Now, there's a lot of discussion going on. In fact, two floors up from where we are speaking, the experts are trying to work out the modalities for the fund, both in terms of who contributes to the fund and then also what are the mechanisms for distributing the money that goes into the fund. And in a way, also depending on what is decided there, that will, of course, then also determine what kind of existing entity might be well suited to carry that out, or whether maybe a totally new fund would need to be created. That is a discussion that we believe will come to a positive conclusion in COP16.
Maybe just to add to that, last week here, the working group that's developing the details to operationalize this digital sequence information multilateral mechanism, including the fund, made a lot of progress. So there's a good draft decision on the table now that parties will negotiate when they get to Cali. And as Astrid just mentioned, then some of the details of the entity that could operate the fund are being discussed as we speak. And the advice from that body will also go to COP. There's then the broader question of funding and resource mobilization, where at COP15, This was perhaps the most difficult issue to resolve at COP15, and there were initially two visions on the table. One that we have a financial mechanism, the Global Environment Facility, and we don't need new funding, a new funding mechanism. We need new funding, we need money, but we don't necessarily need a new fund. And the other vision was to create a brand new global biodiversity fund, a very broad fund. That discussion will continue in Cali. That was not resolved at COP15. But what was agreed at COP15 as an interim solution and as a compromise solution, and in fact, it was put on the table by Colombia at the time, incoming COP presidency, was from now to 2030 to help support the implementation of the Kunming-Montreal Global Biodiversity Framework to have a new funding window within the existing mechanism. That's the GEF. And so that is the Global Biodiversity Framework Fund that both ministers referred to earlier. The COP15 asked the GEF to establish that. It was established very quickly by June last year. And thanks to Canada, who put the first $200 million into that fund, it is operational, and a few other donors have added some funds since then. But the bigger discussion as to what funding mechanism may take place and may be put in place by 2030 is still being discussed. That will be a major issue for discussion in COP16. There are differences between developed and developing countries on this matter, but we hope that we can achieve a common sense of purpose on this at COP16, and also broaden the debate so that we're looking at all sorts of opportunities, which will include the DSI fund that Astrid mentioned, and include other items that are other ideas that are on the table, such as Brazil's Tropical Forest Forever Fund and so on. And among those also, these are funds that are not formally under the convention process. There's a number of initiatives that parties have put forward, and one particular one among them established at the first part of COP15, which actually took place in Kunming in 2021, in October 2021, is the Kunming Biodiversity Fund, which was announced by the president of China, Xi Jinping, at that time. As Essa mentioned, $236 million was committed from now, from then over the 10 years, so just beyond 2030. The Secretariat has been working with China and with the United Nations Environment Programme and the United Nations Development Programme to put that fund into operation. It is now being operationalized. The new council for that fund is being established and is expected to meet in the coming weeks. And that fund will be operational by COP16. The intention is, I think, of China to be able to showcase the first call for proposals at COP16.
Mm-hmm. Great. Okay, excellent. Thank you very, very much. The next question I'm going to take is from Elisa Uzisi. Elisa tried to ask a question at the DSI press conference last week, but it didn't work out. So Elisa has a question for the Executive Secretary. And the question says, you mentioned expecting a breakthrough at COP16. Now, considering the conclusion of the recent negotiations this week, how confident are you that a plan of action will be confirmed at COP16? Elisa, are you able to open your mic and clarify what plan of action you mean? Elisa, can you open your mic, or will you have to put it in the chat? Because I know you had problems last week as well. She's typing. I'm not sure. So maybe Astrid, why don't you begin?
For that, I think David has already spoken to that question just now. So yes, we are confident in the sense that I think we have to see where we were when we started last week's meeting. So we came basically with an empty slate and some ideas, and parties came together and left that meeting with a draft recommendation and a narrowed down set of issues that still need to be discussed at COP16. and with options, very clear options that now need to be chosen, and which are now, as we said before, currently being looked at by resource mobilization experts. But what struck me about this meeting is clearly one of the issues where perspectives are different. It is not necessarily an issue which pitches the global north against the global south, but of course there is a difference whether you're a country that is biodiversity rich or whether you're a country that benefits mostly from the biodiversity resources in other countries. That brings different perspectives to the table. But what struck me in that meeting, and that is why I am optimistic for COP16, is that parties coming together with all these different perspectives clearly came with the intent to resolve the issue and to make sure that that mechanism, which was already set up at COP15, will indeed be operationalized by COP16. And that is just also very urgent and important, because we believe, and the Secretariat has been carrying out a study on that, that this mechanism is able to mobilize significant funds for biodiversity. And I think all of us working on biodiversity, and I think also all of you in this press conference, you're all aware that these are really urgently needed funds. So therefore, everybody has an interest in making this mechanism and the Global Fund operational. And as I said, people come here, they are solution-oriented. And we hope that the Espirito de Cali will be the same as the Spirit of Montreal and carry us forward.
Great, thank you very much. So I also noticed that the answer that the Executive Secretary gave responds to Ilana Cardiel's answer from RESET, because she was asking also about DSI. So I think actually, so Ilana, you should refer to the previous answer from the Executive Secretary for yours. Or does David have one more thing to capture? Go ahead.
Well, just building on what Astrid said, it was agreed in principle at COP15 that there should be fair and equitable sharing of benefits from the use of digital sequence information on genetic resources. So that means genetic resources that have originally come from somewhere, from countries, they've been digitized, they're now in the public domain in international databases. There's a need for a mechanism to make sure that the benefits that pharmaceutical companies, the agricultural biotech, but other users of that material, the profits they make, if you like, at least a small proportion of those can be then made available to countries and to communities to continue to protect biodiversity. So that's the essence of what is happening here. And that was agreed in principle, which was a big step forward, but it had to be operationalized, and that is not so straightforward. So there's been a lot of work, and that expert work over the last year and a half, which all fed into that intergovernmental negotiation that took place last week. And on the basis of that work now, there are very clear options on the table, and a limited number of them, for how those contributions could be made, who would need to make them, and how the money would be dispersed, and whom to. There's a lot of agreement, for instance, that among the beneficiaries of the fund that will be created would be Indigenous peoples and local communities, recognising that they contribute they play an outsized role in the conservation and sustainable use of biodiversity. Another important aspect of this is that the mechanism is being designed, and there seems to be a very broad consensus that it should be designed in a way that innovation is not inhibited, that companies and researchers in the academic sector and elsewhere can continue to have access to this material without restriction, as long as down the value chain, benefits can be shared. So a lot of progress has been made, but still, yes, more work to be done between now and Cali. And then, of course, we need the political will in Cali to get this over the line.
Okay, thank you very much. So there's another question left in the chat that I'll bring, and it's interesting because it's actually a question that spans from something that started at COP14 that continues through COP16. So Vanessa, I don't have your publication here, but Vanessa said that, so Minister Mohammed spoke about bringing the whole of society, the implementation of the Global Biodiversity Framework, and we actually all have talked about this. So the question that's there is the COP16 presidency and the CBD Secretariat considering strengthening the CBD action agenda to bring together non-state actors closer to the process of implementation? And this is an interesting question. Vanessa says, you know, considering how successful this kind of thing has been, the climate action agenda in the implementation of the Paris Agreement. So we get to come back to the action agenda and talk about what's moving forward. So I'll turn that to both of you to answer.
Yes, indeed. The idea of an action agenda was launched back in COP14 in Sharm el-Sheikh. And this really builds on, I think, what we have under the Convention on Biological Diversity, a very strong engagement of what is called more in the Climate Convention, non-state actors. We call really all the stakeholders or the rights holders that are engaged in the CBD, including Indigenous peoples and local communities whose role is recognised in the treaty itself. And as Minister Susanna Mohammad mentioned, we are looking forward to further strengthening that role at COP16. And of course, over time, we've seen more and more other constituencies from civil society, from women and youth and business be engaged in the convention. And that now, I think, that's really recognized in the Kunming-Montreal Global Biodiversity Framework, where we have specific targets about the participation of all these different groups. We also have targets in the framework that enable these contributions, including, for example, Target 15, which is really aimed at increasing the engagement of business with a view to decreasing any negative impacts on biodiversity and enhancing positive impacts. And that's to be done through businesses recognizing their dependencies on biodiversity, and their impacts on biodiversity, so that those impacts where negative can be progressively reduced. So I think we have a lot of tools under the convention, some of them embedded in the Kunming-Montreal Global Biodiversity Framework itself for enhancing that participation. ACT COP16, Susanna Mohammad mentioned a lot of the activities in the green zone. We will also continue in the blue zone, the formal negotiation zone, with a number of events. We call these various summits or fora. There'll be one for Indigenous peoples and local communities, another is called the Nature and Culture Summit. There'll be another for cities and subnational governments, building on decisions that have been taken to enhance the role of cities, provinces, states in the process, another for finance, another for the business community. And all of these will also come together in what we call the action zone, where there will be interactions between all these different constituencies.
Great. Okay. I'm going to take one last question. Ehsan, you get the benefit of getting another question yet. So we'll let you ask a question and then we'll close the conference because we've got another event that we've got to get to right away. So Ehsan, go ahead. The floor is yours.
Hi there. Can you hear again?
You sure can. Go right ahead.
Thanks so much. Really appreciate it. I feel privileged. I shouldn't be. I just want to loop back to the beginning when you mentioned, I think it was Minister Mohammad mentioned climate and biodiversity together. And I just wondered, with the Summit of the Future coming and so much promise of the Climate and Biodiversity Conventions working together, biodiversity was very present at the last climate COP. Can you say something about hopefully a new dawn, you know, a bit more synergy between your two conventions?
Yeah, I think a new dawn is a good expression. As you said, there's a lot of discussion about synergies, a lot of movement towards more synergies, not just in the context of the Summit of the Future, but of course also and specifically at COP28 last year, where everybody really talked about the fact that climate and biodiversity are one crisis. Susanna Mohammad speaks about the two sides of one coin. And when we have one crisis, we also have the good fortune in a way that to these two aspects of one crisis, there's also solutions that can help us both address climate change and biodiversity. So it is absolutely important that the conventions work closely together. We are party-driven processes, so that is clear. So we, of course, look also to our parties, and we have various decisions for us at COP16 that will look at the relationship between biodiversity and climate change, that will also look at cooperation between multilateral environment agreements. And we hope, and I personally hope, that we would get a mandate from our constituencies, so from our parties, to make concrete proposals how we can work together with parties and support parties in their implementation to also bring these processes together. Because one thing is to speak about synergies at global level. That is important because we have to recognize how these issues hang together. But the other thing that is really important is the implementation, and that takes place at national level. And I would like to see very much us to be able to have a mandate to support parties in looking at national implementation plans, be the NBSUPs under our convention, the NDCs under the Climate Convention, and see how things can be brought together, whether we can do more in terms of joint communication, in terms of education, in terms of planning, all of this. But for all of that, we need a mandate from our parties. Now, COP16 is the first of the three UEO conventions that meet within a space of just a few months. So we hope to set a positive sort of scene and also maybe be able to call on the other conventions to make similar decisions to then pave the way for the future. And you may have heard already that Susanna Mohammed speaks a lot about the road from Cali to Belém, so from COP16 to COP30. And she's working together not just with the incoming Brazilian presidency of the Climate Convention, but also with the current presidency, so Azerbaijan, and with Saudi Arabia. And we will see events in the context of the Summit of the Future where the four conventions, sorry, the three conventions of the four presidencies will come together and articulate their vision on these greater synergies that everybody wants to see.
And just thinking, I mean, this can also build on the, I think, very useful initiative from the two COP presidencies in COP28, so China and UAE, calling for integration of work at the national level on NDCs and NBSAPs. And since NBSAPs now have been developed at the same time as the NDCs are being upgraded, and we know it's clear from the stock take in COP28 in Dubai that they need to be upgraded, right? And that's what has to happen now, as far as possible before Baku, but certainly before Belém. And so these linkages that Astrid just mentioned mentioned are really important there. And then if I may, I think also very much, I think we all think these are really just different windows into one big planetary crisis. I think also very much the public often look at these things in a much more integrated way than sometimes policymakers do. And, you know, obviously media has a big role here as well. You know, we've seen, right, in recent years, increasing incidence of fires, of floods, of droughts, of heat waves. And these are rightly attributed to climate change in the sense that the frequency of them and the intensity of them is increasing, and that's definitely related to climate change. But it's also related to biodiversity loss, and it's also related to ecosystem degradation, right? And I think we need to make that clearer all the time. The fires in Hawaii were more intense because of invasive alien species. Same actually has some fires around Bogota that happened to be burning when I was visiting in January. Both droughts and floods are partly due to ecosystem degradation upstream, or the loss of wetlands that buffer against these events. So very much we're looking at a combined crisis, and very much we're looking at common solutions.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much, Executive Secretary, Deputy Executive Secretary, for joining us. Thanks to all of you for taking this time. I know for some of you it's late, Desan. I can see darkness outside your window there. So thanks so much. This conference has been recorded. We'll be posting this on our website. So we look forward to seeing you to other press events in the lead up to Cali. And I certainly hope that we see all of you in Cali as well. So good afternoon and good evening to you all. Thanks. Are we out? Okay. Oh, that's right.